Everyone, welcome to The Final Four is Not on the Schedule. I'm your host, Eric, alongside with expert analyst, Rod. Thanks for joining us on the best MSU basketball podcast featuring an in-depth recruiting, game matchup, and post-game analysis. We dive deep to give you the best tools to enjoy the Spartans and impress your friends and family. Hey, everybody, it's Eric alongside Rod. We're here for our Maryland preview, where Maryland Terrapins visit the Michigan State Spartans at the Breslin Center on Tuesday. Before we begin, I just want to thank all our donors to the show, the people who, you guys are the ones who support this and really keep us going, give us the opportunity to add extra features and interviews and things like that, all kinds of new content. And so you're the one who makes it easier to justify all the extra work we put in. Because I know Rod's got, I don't know what, you have like four jobs and I work full time too. This is definitely a hobby and it's a lot of fun, but it sort of certainly makes it a lot easier with you guys supporting us so much. So I want to thank those of you on Patreon, those who support us monthly, especially those at the Cleaves level, Jason Yeager, Brian O'Donnell, Chad Hickey, and those at the Draymond Green level, Michael Bosnick, Jim L., Dan Rankin, Adam Walzak, Doug Robinson, and James Benton, and all of you who support us on the Scott Skiles level too. You guys are great and amazing. I really appreciate it a ton. If you want to support the show, there are plenty of opportunities. You can do one-time gifts via PayPal or Venmo, or you can do the monthly through Patreon. You can find that at patreon.com/TFFINOTSMSU, or the easier thing is just going to our support page at thefinalfoursontheschedule.com/support. Another great way to support the show is to support our sponsor, Nudge Printing. I always, when I take care of patients, I'm always asking them, you know, what they do and sort of how they got into various businesses. I find it very fascinating because you meet someone who has a tool and die shop and you wonder how they got into it, or like, you know, make zippers or something. Like, you know, you don't, things that everyday sort of things you don't think about sort of how it gets, you know, to whatever product you're using. And I'm always fascinated. I was talking to Gabe, but like, you know, how did you get going in this printing business? And he and his wife both had full-time jobs. He and Brittany, you know, they're MSU alums. And he said, well, you know, they liked t-shirts a lot, but he always liked Fatheads and he was looking to buy some Fatheads and he couldn't find one, the one he wanted. And so he went to a company with the design. They said, well, we can make 10. So he said, well, I guess I'll buy 10 and then I'll have to sell 9 to family and friends. And that, you know, is always the spark, right? That starts you down some path. And so as sort of like a part-time job, they were running printing for quite a while. And eventually they decided to take the plunge and go full time and get their own print shop and hire their own people and start doing their own screen printing. And I guess from there, they've now created a small empire in Portland, Michigan, Nudge Printing. You can go to nudgeprinting.com. You see all their products, really great screen printing for both shirts and sweatshirts, hoodies, sort of regular Michigan State stuff. And then the vintage stuff that Rod and I remember from our youth. With the Gruff Sparty, you can get all that stuff, really high quality stuff made here in Michigan by Michigan State alums. Also, they have opportunities to buy all kinds of other things from other schools, I should say, in Michigan, outside of the University of Michigan. So you can get Northern Michigan, Michigan Tech, Northwood University, Oakland, Saginaw Valley State, Wayne State, Western, Central, Eastern, Ferris. I mean, pretty much any school in Michigan again. And then a number of other schools nationally, like Florida Gulf Coast, Texas, I think it's Texas State, Baylor. And so, you know, if you've got another person in your life who would want that sort of gear and swag, you can certainly get it there too. They have decals. I got a nice, really cool decal I got on my laptop. So now I don't get it mixed up with my wife's that's sitting around the house. So anyway, check out their stuff at nudgeprinting.com. You can get 20% off as a listener for this show if you enter the code FINAL4 into the coupon code at checkout. Also, you can get a $5 coupon, gift card for Nudge Printing if you take a screenshot of a review you leave for this show on your podcast player of choice. Email it to me at eric@tffinots.com or find some other way of getting it to me, and then I will send you a coupon code so you get an extra $5 off in addition to the 20% off. So, great way to support the show. And soon we will have our own gear that you can buy through the show, through Nudge Printing. And that is coming up soon. So the final sort of programming note I want to make is, you know, in addition to all this new content we're putting out. We are going to have on, we've had a number of coaches on. We've had Garland on. We've had Thomas Kelly. We're actually going to have Mike Garland on again in a couple weeks. He's going to break down the, the Iowa game? I think it's the Iowa game. The 25th. Yeah, I think it's the Iowa game. And then also we've had on Garrick Norman, Jeremy Fears, incoming freshman. We're going to have Maddie Sissoko on in just a couple days. And so make sure you, if you don't subscribe to the show, be sure to subscribe and listen to that interview. It's going to be great. We'll also premiere that on YouTube. If you like to watch the show, you can watch it. Watch us talking to Maddie. That will premiere on Thursday at noon. So you can go to head on over to our YouTube page. You can find that at YouTube/@TFFINOTS, or just search out the Final Four. It's not on the schedule. You can certainly get it at YouTube. All right. So let's talk about Maryland. Maryland is 16-7, 7-5 in the conference. They're riding a 4-game winning streak. I think they're undefeated at home this season in the Big Ten. They just obliterated a really miserable team. Minnesota's just, boy, they're having all kinds of problems. They beat them 81-46 in Minneapolis Saturday night. They've been a kind of a funny team. They sort of were red hot to start the season 8-0, and you started thinking, oh, this is a really good team. They beat Miami, they beat Illinois, and then they went 4-7, and so now they've won 4 in a row. So they're actually really pretty good ranking in KenPom. They're number 23. They're 36 on offense, 23rd on defense. They don't shoot very well from three. They're under 31% from three, putting them at 312th, but they're really good from two, so they're 56. They don't turn the ball over. They're number 60th in turnovers. Pretty good offensive rebounding team at number 98. Get to the line quite a bit at number 86, which is, I guess, low for Maryland historically under Turgeon, but still a little better than average, obviously. They shoot okay when they're there. They're about a little under 74%. Defense are solid, number 31st against three, number 45th against twos. They don't foul a lot, and they do a good job limiting attempts, which we've talked in the past. That is generally the key for getting good three defense. They're not a very good defensive rebounding team, however, and so there are opportunities there where they're number 208th.
A comment about KenPom, and we've talked about this in certain respects, and it's actually been a national conversation that, unlike previous years, there seems to be some real divergence between the analytic systems and I don't want to demean it, but eye test is usually met in a demeaning fashion. But
right,
let's say there's been more of a divorce between what the metric systems are telling us and what the general sense is around how good a team is or isn't. So I'm going to give you an example related to Maryland of where I think the problem is lying with KenPom right now. And we'll see if he tweaks it. I don't know that he will, because I think he's pretty convinced of the merits of this approach. But Maryland was number 30 going into yesterday's game overall. They are now number 23. That is after one game in which they beat a miserable opponent very badly. So what that's telling me is that margin of victory is a bigger factor than I think has generally been realized. And I don't know if I haven't done enough of a deep dive, nor have I seen anybody else do it. Although I have seen people suggest this is the problem. I don't know if we're seeing more of that going on where teams are pounding or just really obliterating a few opponents and are getting a lot of benefit from that either is allowing them to rise higher than reason, general understanding would suggest should be, or like Ohio State's been a classic example of this. Ohio State keeps losing and losing and losing, but they're not falling very much in KenPom. Right. And it doesn't make any sense. It has to be that they had some blowout victories and their losses have been close. I would imagine that the defense of this is, over time, margin of victory or point differential across the board, all games, generally correlates to a team's strength or weakness, relatively speaking. And so I'm not expecting him to revise his system or the net to revise their system based on 1 year. But when I saw that, and I know this because to do this preview, I had to do it last night. I kept waiting for it to get updated. And it took a little longer than it normally does on KenPom. So Maryland was sitting at 30-30-30-30 without the Minnesota game factored in. And then I see they jumped to 23. I was like, oh my God, that game shouldn't be worth seven spots. There's no way. But it is, yeah, clearly. And that's the thing that changed, is that they beat the shit out of a bad Big Ten team. The only really, truly bad Big Ten team. So make that make sense, you know? Anyway, just a comment. Maryland is, it's funny because I really thought, well, they finally moved on from Turgeon. It'll be a different approach, but they do look somewhat similar to a Turgeon team in that they're still getting to the line decently. It's a big part of their offense. They're pretty good from two. They're a decent offensive rebounding team. They are a miserable three-point shooting team. So the first thing that tells you, if you're Michigan State, is you've got to turn them into a jump shooting team. That's how you're going to have success in stopping them. I think they're a bit more consistent across the board defensively, except they've got that one Achilles heel, which is they a very bad defensive rebounding team. So there could be opportunities for second chances. But in general, they do a good job, as you said, of limiting three-point attempts. And then when you do get them, you don't tend to hit a high percentage. And they're pretty too as well. Those are the big things you look for in a solid defensive team. And their profile suggests they are that.
Yeah, going back to a little bit to, back to the KenPom, you know, net is which was supposedly the NCAA uses in their selection process.
Yeah.
You know, that is largely, and they part of their equation is margin of victory as well. And it's very interesting. I'm sure the game is done by now, but Michigan was beating up on Ohio State pretty badly. They were up like 11
6 minutes
left. Yeah. So prior to that outcome, Ohio State was number 27th or something in the net, which is crazy because they've hardly won any game in the Big Ten. And just to your point,
3-9 now. They're 3-9 in the Big Ten. They've lost, I think they've lost 9 of 10 or 8 of 9, something like that.
Yeah, they're going to have to try and figure that. I mean, I do understand there is some validity and there's some utility, I guess you'd say, in the margin of victory, because certainly if you're winning every game by 1 point, like Wisconsin last year, you don't want to overvalue those wins. Although you know, it's better than to lose them. But, you know, you can't overvalue them too. I mean, you know, it's almost better like a metric for gambling than it is actually for maybe selecting teams that are worthy of making it to the NCAA tournament.
Well, I think some would tell you that there shouldn't be much of a difference between those two things. I mean, there is a difference between a predictive metric, which is what gambling is supposed to be doing, and a relative assessment of strength, I guess. But I could also see the argument was saying, well, there really isn't or shouldn't be much of a difference between the two. But this year is a test. I believe wholeheartedly, I have no difficulty believing that as a general proposition, margin of victory is a pretty decent correlate for quote unquote strength or weakness. I can believe that. And you cited a really good example. Last year's Wisconsin team kept getting by the skin of their teeth. And you knew from watching them, hey, this is not a powerhouse team. But if you looked at the won and lost record, you would think they were better than they actually were. And then I think postseason sort of is the ultimate confirmation of this. And it confirmed that, no, they were not a powerhouse. But this year is providing a real test, because it's not just Ohio State. It's not just Maryland. There are a lot of these weird results that don't seem to make a lot of sense. But when I could see one certain thing, in a largely meaningless game, in my view, one that, and I certainly am not suggesting Maryland should have been penalized for it, but I don't know how much of a bump. My assessment of what Maryland is as a team didn't move at all based on what they did to Minnesota.
Sure,
like nothing. Yeah. It didn't change at all. And I would think most people who have watched them, understand the Big Ten, understand college basketball this year, would come to the same conclusion that, no, that's okay, you won. And oh, and the other thing is, I believe it was on the road, which probably boosted it even further.
Sure.
That they did that at Minnesota. But again, it doesn't change much for me. And I don't think it should change much for how their team is viewed. But according to KenPom, that was worth a 7-spot jump. That just doesn't track with reality.
Yeah, right. But maybe some of the teams above it fell. I don't know.
I don't think so. I don't think 7 is a, just for those who don't follow this closely, jumping up 7 spots is a big move. That is a big
sure.
move. You don't typically see that even when you get a good result. Like if Michigan State had beaten Purdue at Breslin, where they almost had it, I wouldn't have expected a 7-spot jump. I might have expected 4, 3, or 7's a lot. And it just, I tend to think now that I'm reconsidering it, it wasn't even just the margin of victory. It was that they did it on the road. And I'm guessing what that tells us is that this black box of how KenPom values these things, which he doesn't disclose, really, probably the net as well in a similar fashion, really values those things. And I think at least for this year, it's not leading us to outcomes that seem to track as closely to the way most people would perceive it as we normally find. I normally don't have a world of disagreement with it. You know, I mean, you're fighting math, but it is really laying bare, I think, some of these things that maybe should be rethought or tweaked. Because it's like, and Ohio State is the opposite, as you said, where they keep losing and they're not falling.
Yeah.
That makes no sense.
Well, and I think at some level too, I mean, I know the net is supposed to be, once you get a certain margin of victory, it doesn't matter, right? Like once you win by, say, 10 or 12 points, they cap it, right? Maybe KenPom doesn't do that as much, and so you may have more dramatic swings. Like if you win by 50, it's worth more than winning by 15, which, you know, again, you could argue that matters.
Do we know what Maryland's jump was in the net? I didn't look at it.
You know, I don't know.
Yeah,
I'd be
curious.
That'd be interesting to see what it is.
The KenPom jump was dramatic for that game. It was just dramatic.
Yeah, maybe there's some sort of multiplier if you're on the road. I mean, it's his own proprietary algorithm, right? So,
yeah.
So getting back to sort of Maryland and the team, you know, this is a team that I think, you know, most people, when you look at them, you're not afraid of them. But they do manage to win, and they're certainly really tough at home. So they're kind of like the Maryland team from a few years ago, where I'm not quite sure what to make of them. We didn't really think they were going to be that great this year. So they're definitely, as of right now, they're much better than we had thought they were going to be. You know, the fact that we can say they're just miles better than Minnesota. You know, I mean, so I don't know.
It's a weird deal because my perception of Maryland has swung wildly. Early on, I was very impressed because you're right. We figured transitional year, you know, they had no real recruiting class to speak of. They added a few transfers, including their two starting guards. And I thought, okay, those guys look decent, but decent's not enough. And it didn't look like they were going to be very deep. And that part has borne out to be true. They're not. But you add all that up, and to me, it seemed like, well, they're a team you don't rule out of NCAA tournament bid contention, but they would be on the lower end of that gigantic middle of the pack. And then they got off to the start they did. They beat Miami of Florida, who's a decent team, top 40 team. They beat Illinois, and were 8-0. You're like, okay, you know, maybe they are. And they were playing very, very well. And then they hit the skids. They go 4-7 over the next 11 games, and their deep shooting fell off a cliff. You know, offensively, they were just kind of a mess during that period. They really struggled to score. And it felt like, to me, it just felt like, all right, they're falling back to earth, reverting to the mean, and they look like a lower end, middle of the pack Big Ten team that is going to be right on the bubble line. And now they've won four in a row. And despite my going on about only beating Minnesota, they've obviously beaten other teams too. They beat Indiana during this run. So they've played better again. I still don't know fully what to make of them. There are some things that defensively, I think they've been pretty consistent. Offensively, it's when they are forced into shooting jumpers, it's ugly. I mean, they are a bad shooting team. Even their good players, you know, even their point guard, Jameer Young, has been a really good player. He can't shoot. So
yeah,
if you can turn them, if you can keep them away from the basket, out of the lane, off the free throw line, they struggle to score. But when they can do those other things, they get by, you know? So it's a decent team, a solid team, but I still don't know if I'm convinced as to what the real Maryland is. And I don't know that I'm going to have a real feeling on that until we get to the end, because, you know, they're on a run right now, but look, if you tell me they lose four out of their next five, that's not going to shock me either. And I haven't even looked at their schedule. It's the nature of the Big Ten, and it's the nature of this team in particular. I just feel like there's not enough offensive consistency to allow them to say, well, they've arrived at a certain elevated level and that's where they're going to stay. I'm not ready to buy that yet.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the Big Ten, what a mess. I mean, how many teams, almost the entire league is between 7-5 and
six and seven.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. Pretty crazy. I mean, Michigan State's a game behind Maryland, and they're going to be soon two games back from Michigan? But I don't think either of those teams are probably better.
Michigan's 7-5.
They'll be 7-5. Okay, so they'll be what, game back from Michigan as well? I mean, everybody's 7-5. Purdue, of course, lost. And just to, you know, interestingly, you know, Zach Edey scored 33 points and 18 rebounds against the great Trace Jackson Davis. So maybe he wouldn't have been the difference in preventing Michigan State from stopping Edey. Maybe Edey's really good, Rod. I'm not sure. That maybe.
Yeah.
You can't.
Yeah. It's just that's the thing. I mean, the thing that we missed on in our preseason preview was that one team would elevate above everybody else and that it would be Purdue. We didn't call that, but everything else, I feel we nailed that. There just isn't much difference. And it's hard to distinguish between these teams because they get on. It's everybody's ebbing and flowing constantly in different directions at different points in the season. So right now, Maryland's been on a roll. Michigan State's been struggling. That tells you nothing about what's going to happen on Tuesday night.
No, yeah, because you look at the teams Michigan State's been playing and where they've been playing, and so
it's that, and it's you can turn you could start doing some things better than you had been doing. We see a lot of that, you know. If Maryland, I haven't looked at the numbers over this 4-game win streak, but if they've been shooting the three better, well, that would be an area that's improved. And, you know, these things can happen for short periods of time, but this is why. What we said at the season's outset, and I think has been borne out, is so important. Most of the teams in the Big Ten have certain strengths. There aren't many teams that are coming in and you just say, boy, they just don't do anything well. But everybody has significant flaws. Everybody. You know, Purdue being the kind of exception, but I would say even with them, their deep shooting is far from a strength, you know? So that's what happens when you have teams that have significant flaws, is you're going to find it tough to find a level of consistency.
Not to be hyperbolic or alarm bells, this is a game that Michigan State needs to get right, and they need to win this game because...
I think
we both think that this team is better than their record suggests, but I guess in some ways you are your record too. So This is a team that can go on a little bit of a run, but I think we're due for one. We just kind of, this feels like that February, just kind of getting things ramped up. But, you know, the Rutgers game was there, right? I don't know.
They are not on the bubble right now, but you start losing home games, you get there, you know?
Right.
I would agree with you. Nothing's, if they lose this game, it doesn't mean that they're not going to the tournament, but you start putting yourself under a lot more pressure. You need to take care of the games that are at Breslin. You need to win the winnable games. If Michigan State, here's what I will say. If Michigan State wins all four of their remaining home games and they only win one road game, let's say they only win the game at Nebraska, they lose at Ohio State, they lose at Michigan, they lose at Iowa. If they go 5-3 the rest of the way, they're in no problem. They'd be 11-9. They're in no problem. But you got to win the home games. You start losing home games, then you're putting pressure on yourself. Now, I don't think 5-3 should be the goal. Every one of these remaining games is winnable and should be a game Michigan State should feel like they can go and win. But will they do it? Well, as we're going to talk about, there's some things that have got to get better in a hurry. And no better time to start it than Tuesday night.
Yeah, some home cooking may be exactly what they need. And so, well, I guess let's go through the starters in Maryland and to kind of get things going here. We'll start with Jameer Young, 6'1 grad transfer from Charlotte. He's been really, really good. He's averaging 16 points a game on 29 and 83 shooting. So not a great outside shooter. Pulls down 5 rebounds a game, leads the team with 71 assists. But he does have 52 turnovers, averages almost 5 free throws a game. And I was watching The Journey, actually, that Big Ten show, and they had him. They featured him, and he actually played 5 minutes from Maryland at DeMatha Catholic School.
Yep.
With Hunter Dickinson was his teammate. So
that's right.
But anyway, he's been a very good addition to the team this season.
Yeah, and he's the first DeMatha kid Maryland's had in, I forget how long, a long time. That is significant because Maryland for a long time struggled to get kids from the DMV, meaning the DC, Maryland, Virginia area, which is, if those of you who know and follow this stuff, is a talent rich area of the country. And the feeling has long been that Maryland did not take advantage at all of its proximity to Washington, D.C. in particular, that they historically, and I mean going back to Lefty Driesell, that they historically struggled to get kids out of D.C. They generally did okay in Baltimore, but not in D.C. And so it's been a long time since they've had a DeMatha kid, and DeMatha has been a powerhouse high school basketball program for 60 years. I mean, going back to the early 60s, if I remember correctly, I think I've got this right. I think they were the only school to beat Lou Alcindor, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, when he was at Power Memorial in New York City. I think DeMatha is the only school to beat him when he was in high school. So it goes back that far, you know, to the early to mid 60s. They had a guy, Morgan Wooten, W-O-O-T-E-N, who was their coach for a long time. It's considered by a lot of people to be the best high school coach in history. So a lot of history and tradition in that program, and Maryland has not done a good job of recruiting it. So Jameer Young is a guy they didn't recruit when he was in high school. They got a second chance with him transferring back, and they needed him. And he's made the most of it. Maryland's really been kind of adrift at point guard. Their situation has sort of mirrored Michigan State's. Anthony Cowan was the same class as Cassius Winston. And he wasn't as good as Cassius Winston, but he was a very good player. And since he left, you know, the 2 years previous, it's been kind of an adventure. If you remember, they had Eric Ayala. That didn't really work. Then they brought in, I'm drawing a blank in his name, the transfer from Rhode Island, who was kind of erratic. They haven't been able to solve it. Young is not a perfect point guard, but he's been very important for them, primarily because he's given them scoring punch. And he struggles shooting the jumper, but fortunately for them, that's not all he does. He's been pretty effective at getting to the line. Fats Russell, that's who I was thinking of from last year from Rhode Island. Anyway, Young's been effective in that way. Gets to the line, shoots a good percentage there. You know, he's a playmaker. He also makes a lot of mistakes, so that's not great. But, you know, beggars aren't going to be choosers. He's definitely been much more of a positive than a negative. I think the key with him, you got to do your best, keep him out of the lane, make him take jump shots.
Yeah, and probably contest those too, make them difficult. So don't let them get going, because even bad shooters can become good shooters if you make learn. So next would be Don Carey, 6'5 grad transfer from Georgetown. Boy, you hear, it's so funny. You used to hear someone from Georgetown, you thought they were pretty good. Now you're just assuming they were terrible. So Carey's averaging 7.1 points a game on 34, 31, and 91 shooting. He hasn't done as much offensively, but good defender.
Yeah, you know, I think they're a little disappointed with what he's given them offensively, but again, they had nobody left, so they had to go get someone to fill these roles, and they'll take it. And he's been a steady defender. You know, he's a veteran, got a lot of experience. So on balance, decent addition, but I would think they could hope for a little more offensive punch.
Next would be Hakeem Hart, 6'8 senior, averaging 11.1 points a game on 49, 30, and 83 shooting, pulling down 4.5 rebounds a game. And, you know, it's not, again, like most of the team, struggles behind the arc, so that's not helped him in that sense.
You know, what's really weird about him, and it makes me wonder if I've started losing, you know, maybe early onset dementia, Alzheimer's, because when I watch him shoot the jumper this year, his shot release is terrible. It's a push from the middle of his chest. It's the kind of thing that you typically see, say, junior high basketball players, where they don't have quite enough strength to really shoot properly with their wrists. It's got to come more from the arms, and it's a deeper, you have to have a deeper push to get the ball elevated. That's what his jumper looks like. And I don't remember him shooting the ball that way in the past. Perhaps he has, and I've just completely forgotten about it. But regardless, it isn't working. And that was always supposed to be the big deal about him, is always a guy with length who can shoot. Well, 30% from three isn't getting it done. Now, again, he's scoring in double digits, so he's finding ways to put points on the board. But I just think they thought he'd be more than that as a senior, you know, given what his purported strengths were.
Yeah. Next would be Dante Scott, 6'7 senior. He's been really good every time he's played Michigan State. He's averaging 12.3 points a game and 6.2 rebounds and shooting 40, 30, and 76.
He's an interesting player because I've really liked him at different points in his career. And the primary reason I liked him is that there were times over the previous couple of years where he actually played the five for them, and he still does in certain lineups. Mm-hmm. But when he's really got it going, meaning he's got his jumper dialed in, he is a huge mismatch problem. Huge, because he can pass, he can take you off the dribble, and at different times in his career, he could shoot. I didn't look it up, but I'm pretty sure he had a year he was a plus 40% three-point shooter. Well, that's in the rearview mirror. This year has kind of mirrored Maryland's season overall. He said he'd lost a lot of weight, so he looks really good. He's in good condition. And at times this year, I thought he was looking outstanding, like the best I've ever seen him play. And then at other times, he's kind of disappeared and gotten back into some of the inconsistency that plagued him last year. So he's a good player, no doubt about that. But he's one of these guys that I find myself looking at him and saying, man, he should be doing more, because this guy's got a lot of skills, and yet he's got some measurables that, when combined with his skill set, should make him a very difficult player to match up with. And I feel like he's just coming up a little bit short of what he could be.
Finally, Julian Reese, 6'10 sophomore, averaging 10.6 points a game and 6.5 rebounds a game, shooting 66% from the floor, but a dreadful 51% from the line.
Yeah, the foul line is a problem, but otherwise, I think he's on track. I was really impressed with him last year as a freshman. I thought he showed a lot of potential, and to me, he's reminiscent of a lot of these guys that they've had in recent years, like Bruno Fernando, Stick Smith, these long guys that are good athletes. The difference between him and some of those other guys is he doesn't yet have his game develop much at all away from the basket. He hasn't taken a three yet this year. I think if he can add a little bit of a threat away from the rim, he'll be really dangerous. But still, he's made strides. There's no doubt about that. Been a good rebounder, decent interior defender, and he could score around the rim efficiently. So good player, but I think there's even more ceiling for him to reach.
Well, then move on to the reserves. Ian Martinez, 6'3 junior, transferred from Utah, averaging a little under 6 points a game on 44, 40, and 76 shooting. So he can actually hit something from outside, unlike most of the team.
Yeah, just not high volume, but when he takes threes, he's been effective. And they need that production anywhere they can get it. He really struggled shooting the ball last year, which was his first season after transferring over from Utah. So I'm sure they're happy to see him find a little more of an equilibrium offensively.
Next would be Jahari Long, 6'5 transfer from Seton Hall, averaging 2.9 points a game in 12 minutes on 44, 48, and 56 shooting.
Same deal, but even more so. He followed Willard from Seton Hall, so he's obviously a guy Kevin Willard likes. He's been very productive as a shooter, but that's in extremely low volume.
Well, it has to be, right? I mean, 48,
yeah,
averaging less than three a game. It's interesting that you shoot 48% from three and 56 from the line, but probably low volume in both.
It usually goes the other way, right? Free throw shooting shows up before 3-point shooting, but which maybe leads you to perhaps distrust the three percentage a little bit, especially on low volume. But yeah, he's been a help. He understands what his coach wants, because he's played under him more than longer than anybody else has on the roster. And again, pretty decent defensively, but they don't ask these guys to play a ton of minutes. I mean, really, Martinez is the one perimeter guy who plays much.
Next would be Patrick Emelian, 6'7 transfer, grad transfer, who's played at St. Francis, at Western Michigan, and now he's at his third stint. He's a primary post backup. He's averaging a little under 3 points a game and 3.3 rebounds a game in 17 minutes, shooting 50% zero, so over four from three, and 70% from the line.
Yeah, they needed someone, and they got him in the portal, and he's been a godsend in the sense that he's actually been playable. He doesn't produce a whole hell of a lot, but he just needed somebody in case of foul trouble. Fortunately, Maryland doesn't commit a lot of fouls, but in case of foul trouble and just to give guys a blow, he's emerged. So he's been good enough.
Yeah. And then finally, Noah Batchelor, 6'6 freshman wing, averaging 1.9 points a game and 1.4 rebounds a game in 9 minutes, shooting 28, 26, and 58.
Yeah. They were very happy to get him late. I mentioned they didn't have much of a recruiting class. Batchelor was really it. Willard has since turned it up, by the way. He got a pretty good class already signed free. So that will be changing, but it was just the timing of him getting the job that made it tough. But they hoped Batchelor could help, and he's helped a little bit, but he's, as judging by those numbers, you easily struggled to translate as a shooter early on, and that's what thought he could actually do. Not all that unusual. It happens to guys, and perhaps he'll be a jump next, but for his first season, it's been a struggle shooting the ball for her.
Well, the thing that jumps out on you, and just looking at their lineup, they are small in the sense that Julie Reese is 6'10". They don't have anyone to back him up who's, I guess they got Hart, 6'8", but Dante Scott, 6'7", Patrick Emelian, 6'7". So, when Reese is not in the game, if you had some post presence, that may be a place to get some work done.
Yeah, but the thing is, they're not a great shot-blocking team, but they're okay in terms of rim protection, and they've been good defending the two. I think where their size has shown up as a negative has actually been on their defensive boards. They've really been pounded on, other teams have pounded the offensive glass against them. It hasn't shown up as much defensively, but you're right. This is a smaller team, you know, and unlike some other teams that, like Nebraska, for example, that don't have much interior size, but they've got some size on the perimeter, which sort of makes up for it. Maryland doesn't really have that. I mean, Young is a smaller player. Carey's got decent size. Hart's tall, but it's not like they're big. You know, well, we don't have any 6'10 or up guys, but everybody's 6'6 and above. It's not that kind of deal. So
yeah,
they do get small. Scott, even though he's only 6'7, he's always played bigger than that. So that helps a little bit. But honestly, beyond Scott, if it were to be a situation where Scott and Reese were both in trouble, which has not happened to them much at all this year, then you got an issue if you're Maryland.
Why don't we go to the five keys of the game after a brief message? Okay, our five keys of the game brought to you by Nudge Printing. You can find it at nudgeprinting.com. So number one, threes. We saw this, we felt it intensely against Rutgers. Michigan State needs threes to be productive and needs it for the scoring on offense. Generally shoot much better at home, so hopefully that works its way out and they can get some of those jumpers that are open that they've had the last couple games. They just have not been dropping.
Road games. And that's always part of the deal. You don't expect to shoot well at West Lafayette. I've seen it happen many times. Madison Square Garden, you know, whatever, sometimes it happens. They got to get back on track though. It's critical for Michigan State offensively. And I would also say at the other end, you really can't afford Maryland to hit a hot streak. They're a bad shooting team and you need to keep them there. And maybe just as importantly, you want to force them into having to take a lot of them more than they want to. So it's both ways. Michigan State has to have a decisive edge from three.
Yeah, you want to at least, force them to take bad threes, right? That's the key. That's and shot clock running down. And
get off, find a way to get off a decent amount of attempts on offense and hit a decent amount. Don't need 45% as a team, but it's got to be, I would say, if Michigan is anything below a moderate volume, say mid to high teens, and at least in the mid-30s, in terms of a percentage, that's probably not good enough.
So number two key of the game, A.J. Hogard. He has not been playing really great recently. Maybe looked like he was turning around a little bit against Purdue, but then just unable to really run the offense, which is so critical for Tom Izzo offense, especially recently. And sort of throw gas in the fire there, his backup Holloman has been hit the freshman wall as well. And so you can't even go to his backup and hope to get any consistency there either.
Yeah. Somebody was talking about how, you know, MSU can't sit Hogarth the way they did in segments of the Rutgers game. And my response to that was, I hear you. There's no better option. But you also can't play AJ the minutes that they've been playing him if he's playing the way that he is. So I don't know what else you do. You have to do something to get through to him. You know, Izzo in his post game seemed to suggest that he feels AJ is getting tired. And he went further than that, I think, in suggesting that he has let his conditioning lapse. And that because of that, he's not able to play the kind of minutes they were playing him earlier, that Izzo may have to think about trying to dial his minutes back a little bit. And Hogard was asked about it and insisted, no, that's not true. So if you want to read into that there's some message sending going on, feel free. I would not disagree with you. All I know is this. AJ Hogard that has played for Michigan State for the past couple of weeks, not nearly what they need. It's that simple. He was not good against Rutgers. And he has been mostly not good for about 2 weeks or so running. over the course of four or five games now. That can't happen the rest of the way. He is so important to this team unlocking its potential as an all-around player, but especially as the guy at the who's the fulcrum of the offense. He is the hub around which everything else flows, you know? And yesterday, he was making bad reads, bad decisions, and was not putting enough pressure on the defense. Well, consequently, Michigan State struggles offensively, you know? It's as simple as that. So whatever it's going to take to get him back to being the guy he was earlier in the season, that's what needs to happen. And if it doesn't, Michigan's going to continue to struggle. It's that simple.
It's so funny because 3 weeks ago, he was looking so good. And you're like, wow, if he just gets a little bit better, this team is going to go, you can see all sorts of things happen. And then it's just kind of like hitting a wall and kind of going backwards. I don't know.
He's not their best player. I mean, I'm not certain who is. I would probably lean toward Tyson Walker at this point. I think Tyson Walker's been their most consistent presence at both ends. And Jaden Akins is the guy with the highest ceiling still. And if somebody wanted to throw Joey Hauser's name into the ring, I wouldn't argue with that either. But A.J. Hogard's always been their most important guy. That's never been up for debate in my mind. And it's been laid bare the last few weeks how important he is. When he is not playing well, is not doing the things they need him to do, you see it very clearly. So something's got to give.
Well, the number three key to the game is defending without fouling. Not exactly the same team as they were under Turgeon, but they have a little bit of the same trend where they like to get the line quite a bit to get some scoring done.
You can't put this team on the line a bunch. Now, you hope that at home you'd have a chance of holding that down a little bit, but we've seen that theory shot to shit on occasion this year. So they got to somehow, they can't let Maryland live on the line because, again, if you keep this team off the foul line, they're going to have trouble scoring enough. I mean, they just will. I do not count on them hitting a bunch of threes. They, you know, Scott and Reese can score a little bit in the post, but this isn't a team where you would expect them to just wear you out. There's no Zach Edey, TJD here. If you keep them off the foul line, you're going to have a pretty good chance of holding them into a range to be able to take the game. You should be able to beat them.
So number four, key to the game, the boards. Maryland is decent on the offensive glass, pretty terrible defensively. Michigan State has been very good defensively. And I'd say okay, especially of late. They've been a little bit better, especially when Lee called it back on the offense. So, you know, maybe you could get some work done.
Yeah, they've been bad over the course of the season offensively. There's no argument with that. It's clear.
Yeah.
But they have been better lately. To do the job they did against Rutgers, for example, on the offensive boards was pretty impressive. It's strength against strength and weakness against weakness. And so if either team can get an advantage, like if MSU can hold Maryland down on their offensive glass, but do some work on Michigan State's offensive end, that could be a big, big edge.
And finally, number five, transition, which I guess sort of goes back to AJ a little bit, but you know, can Michigan State get some stuff going? They got a little bit of stuff going against Rutgers, you know, a few times their offense looked okay, especially the end of that first half. You know, can you get a little bit more of that and maybe get some easy buckets and get things going early?
It's important for reasons. First is an obvious one. If you can steal some easy baskets, then you're not going against what's a pretty good half court defense, you know. But the second thing is probably even bigger. Maryland is a team with a short bench. You know, we talk about Michigan State's relative lack of depth to most seasons, but in comparison, Michigan State is a much deeper team than Maryland is. So the more energy you can take out of them, you can deplete your tank of gas, the better off you're going to be at winning time. You know, and that's where, like, for example, in the Rutgers game, that didn't happen. Michigan State ran pretty well early, not enough to really have it show up late. You know, it would be nice to see that happen in this game.
You know, one of the staples of the Michigan State transition game is the five, you know, the rim running right down, you know, down the middle. haven't seen that much this year. I mean, Mati Sissoko seems like the kind of guy who could do that, and but yeah. We haven't seen much of that. Do you think is it him not releasing in time? Is he because he's the one getting the rebound and so he's passing? I'm just trying to figure out why that's not happening, because it seems like that'd be the one way to get him going. And
I think it's
getting
all
him an ability
things.
To score.
It's only been there sporadically, but you're right. They haven't gotten enough, not nearly enough. But then how insistent has Michigan State been in terms of looking to push pace? You know, I think you're right in that they're not getting enough help at times from other guys on the boards to allow Mati in particular to be free to run rim to rim, you know? It would be something that would be nice to see show up more often.
So Michigan State is a 1-point favorite per KenPom, which means that on a neutral court, Maryland would be favored. You know, I guess it's a game that, again, Michigan State needs this. They need to get going again. They need to start feeling good about themselves before they head on the road. And, you know, they've got very winnable games coming up, but you got to start winning in some of these games that I think you need to win, right? And this would be a great play time to start against a quality team. I mean, Maryland's, they're no slouch, and like about every team you face, they're going to beat you if you don't play well.
You've got to start finding some level of confidence too before it starts really slipping away. You know, you keep losing games, it's easy to spiral. I mean, look, I saw, you know, going back to Hogard, the body language, the demonstrative, you know, motions toward teammates, not good. That tends to spiral. So high time for a win. And it would be even better if it was an impressive one.
Just a quick programming note. We do have an Ask Me Anything coming up because you guys are so awesome. We want to do an Ask Me Anything. So send your questions along. You can give them to me at eric@tffinots.com. And I guess we should talk about free throws briefly, Rod. So those of you who have been listening for a while know that I was selected to shoot for free throws for an opportunity to win a trip for two to the Final Four. I won my first round, hitting 4 of 10. You get 30 seconds to hit as many as you can. So not a really great performance. If you've seen it online, I was grazing the rim. It was pretty embarrassing. I've been practicing quite a bit, so hopefully I'll be better. I shoot Tuesday night at halftime. So I don't know, but I'll tell you what happens. Then if you're at the game, you can, you know, just try not to, don't jeer too much as I'm out there, but I'll do my best. And then hope then that if I win, then I go to the finals, which is an Ohio State game on the 4th of March. And then I don't know, we're gonna have to figure out what to do as a family, because that's right during spring break. But
well, obviously, best of luck in carrying the Final Four is not on the schedule banner. for the best.
I'll keep everyone updated. It is going to be a brutal, this is the grueling thing about this recording schedule, that is tough, because, you know, I'm at the game. It's a 9 o'clock tip, which means I'm home getting back to Grand Rapids a little after midnight. We'll record our show. We'll have to post it, edit. I got to go to work the next day. So, I mean, I'll be able to do all of those things. I'm used to doing stuff like that. But that's what we do for you, because we love you guys so much.
And all the more reason to hope for a victory, both on Michigan State's part and on your part, to make that all a little easier. Because it's tougher when it's coming off losses, right?
It'll make the drive home a lot better. It is, absolutely. So so I guess until next time, the Final Four is on the schedule. Go Green.